What the Actual Fork podcast is co-hosted by two intuitive eating registered dietitians, yours truly, Sammy Previtt, owner of Fine Food Freedom, and Jenna Warner, owner of Happy Strong Healthy. We can't stand diet culture bullshit and love keeping it real. Our mission is for all humans to believe that they are made for so much more than chasing a smaller body. We are also here to share with you that food can be fun and pleasurable again. Although we are medical professionals, we are human too. We are not afraid to share our deepest, darkest secrets and how years of our lives were taken by diet culture. We started this podcast so no human has to feel alone in their journey towards food freedom. So get comfy and join us for a casual convo where you can expect to laugh, cry, learn, and grow. Welcome back to another episode of What the Actual Fork podcast. This episode was so freaking special. And Jenna's already giggling. We had William Hornby on, which you can find him on Instagram or TikTok at William Hornby, with his online community of almost, I think, over 500,000 people. But a little bit about William. He is at the forefront of raising awareness for men with eating disorders with his advocacy on social media. He speaks publicly on advocacy, mental health, and eating disorder recovery. He travels around the world, both in person and virtually, giving workshops and presentations on the power of becoming the advocate you needed. He is the recipient of the William Donald Schaefer Helping People Award for 2021. He is a member of the Eating Disorder Coalition's Youth Advisory Board and the National Alliance for Eating Disorders Collaborative. He also worked with the National Eating Disorder Association Project HEAL, graduated from Temple, which we talked about in the episode, in 2022 with a BA in business management and BFA in musical theater. He is also a singer-songwriter. So many freaking amazing things. That's not in his bio. I'm just adding that. But with music about recovery, which we talk about, and mental health, which he just released his single Clay, which also has a music video, Amazing, which is a body neutral anthem. And just a fun fact as well, he is an exceptional pumpkin carver and theater performer as well.
And he is also incredibly good and just taught us so much today about boundaries with your mental health in the social media space. And like Sammy was literally talking before and I was like, shut up and press record.
I was like, stop,
hold that thought, because that's when you and I are always the best, is when we're just talking. And we were chatting before we started this intro. We do these intros after we record our episodes, and he brought to light just so many things that I think creators, which is a newer term, right? It's now a career. Creators struggle with things that are unexpected. And whereas Sam and I are dietitians and we work with clients and we have careers outside of the creator space, being that social media has become a huge part of, and I can only speak for myself, but the marketing for my business, there's a lot of these pressures and lack of boundaries that I have found that I'm personally struggling with a lot right now. And he just had so many amazing tips and tricks with that I'm going to implement to help me just be better at it. Because what I was going to say when you were talking before is like, my son is almost two and he's now at the age where he gets angry and he gets visibly frustrated and is showing his big emotions when my phone is in front of my face. And that's very real. And Absolutely. It's, you know, when I'm spending time in the same space as him, but not with him. And listen, I am halfway a stay-at-home mom. I'm with him a lot. And sometimes I need to be working or checking in on something when I'm in his presence. But I really do try and not do that all the time. However, he's now seeing that this thing that's in front of my face means I'm not paying attention to him. Mm-hmm. And that's been really hard for me. And I know that that's just going to continue. And at some point it could become problematic, and I'm aware enough to not allow it to be. But some of the tips, and I'm not going to tell you what they were because I want you to listen to this episode, that could be really helpful for me and something that could really change my life and Noah's as well. and my relationship with my husband.
Because oh, 100%. I was thinking about that the whole time. I mean, I know Sienna, my daughter, is still young, but even what you're saying, like, she's even just at 5 months, like, when you're not paying attention to her, she'll show frustration, obviously not talking, but in different ways. But what you just said made me think of too, like, we are registered dietitians, right? We have these businesses outside of our podcast, outside of social media, where we're seeing clients and we do coaching, all of these things. And social media to us from a business perspective is pretty new. Like I'm saying, like, with like 10 years ago, we weren't doing this. No. And so I think it's something that was very unexpected for both of us. And when I think about it, like, when I first started on social media, it was so fun, right? And it was so new, and it wasn't something we asked for, like growing followings. And then you kind of start to be like, oh wow, like I'm reaching more people and these numbers are growing. And as you grow, it's exciting and it's almost addicting in a way, because you're reaching so many people. But I don't think a lot of people talk about, as positive as that can be, the negative mental health implications that come along with that. And yes, that's where it's, today's episode was just so timely for me personally, because without me saying I was struggling, like, I feel like he just talked on so many things that I was like, oh my gosh, like, I need to implement that to be a better dietitian, to be a better content creator, to show up as my best self, but like, make sure that I'm still centering my own happiness, because it's so easy to perform on social media. I don't know. I'm like blown away by William.
Yeah. I mean, it's very apparent in the world that we live in this year specifically. Like, some big, huge creators, many of them have expressed their loneliness and their struggles on social media with their massive followings of like 1 million, 2 million, many, many millions of people. I'm thinking specifically of the makeup artist, Michaela, of Elise Myers, I know, had a moment like that on social media, Remy Bader. These three names have millions of followers and have all expressed, you know, feelings of loneliness and pressures to continue to show up as they are, you know, and just be expected to just take these comments, right? Like, of people that would never say these things to your face, or, you know, the what ifs of like, what if this video doesn't land well with people, or what if it flops, and then dealing with the monetary backlash or whatever it is from that perspective too. It's a lot. It's a lot. And it's a lot as the person that is not a content creator, that is being pushed content in their face constantly. That's distracting them from their own life too, and distracting them from the world that we actually live in, and showing a world that's not necessarily real either, right? So there's just so much to learn about setting boundaries and taking care of your mental health. And at the end of this episode, he talks about all of the things that he's doing as far as hobbies that have nothing to do with social media, that are actually making his body and mind and soul and emotions happy, that I think was really, really powerful.
Yes. Like, yes, times a million. And I don't even want to like say anything
talk
else
more,
because I think people just really need to hear William speak. And I just have a feeling this is like a part one, because like, I just want to talk
William
to him again.
Come
like,
back.
No, like, I feel like I was sad that we had to end the episode, and I feel like there's just so much more we could dive into. So, enjoy this video, because it's, or this video, geez, that's where
Sammy
my brain's
needs
at.
A nap.
Well, technically, if you're watching on YouTube, you will see it in video, but enjoy this episode, because William is very, very special, and I'm just so grateful that we can share this with our listeners. Welcome back to another episode of What the Actual Fork podcast. We have an amazing TikTok, I'm calling him a celebrity, with us right now, William Hornby. Thank you for being here, William.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, we are
excited.
Freaking excited. And like Jenna and I are already giddy because of what was just spoken off air that we will circle back to.
Okay.
And Jenna, I want you to hold that thought, Jenna. You're going to ask that one. But before we do that, I want to ask you, William, we always love to start off on our podcast of asking, what is your most recent or profound moment, whether it be in person or on social media, that kind of stopped you in your tracks and made you say, what the actual fork is this shit? So something related to mental health, eating disorder, yeah, diet culture, etc.
So I think for me, truly, it was not the initial response to Taylor Swift's music video. I think for me, it was the backlash that she got for changing it. Like, that was really abysmal to me. I expected, because I knew what was going to happen as soon as I saw that music video. I knew that, like, the dedicated Swifties were going to get very, very warrior-like and pretty violently fat phobic. Like, I saw a tweet that was like, it said, Swifties really said Taylor's not fat phobic, but I sure am. And and I think that really summed up the response really well. I knew that was going to happen. I knew that they were going to fight for that decision that she made, like, with their lives. But what was really abysmal to me, especially shocking and upsetting, was the way that they doubled down on their fat phobia and anger after she changed the music video, which is kind of why I wish that she had, you know, made a statement about it instead of just changing it. I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. I love Midnights, but like, truly watching that social media discussion happen and watching fat people get bullied off of the internet for just very gently even calling out, or really calling in Taylor, it was really upsetting to see them be received with such vitriol and hatred. It was really disappointing, expected but disappointing. I think that was my most recent what the actual fork moment, because also I just wanted to, like, you know, listen to Midnights in a very like dumb way. Just be like, ah, new Taylor Swift album, I'm so happy and excited. And instead it became like part of my work week, which I was hoping it wouldn't.
I love how you just said that. Like, you just want to put Midnights on and like think about all of your ex relationships, right? And all of those things.
I just want to be like, Karma is my boyfriend.
Yes.
And just like bop in my car, you know. I don't have to think about her stepping onto a scale that is implying really, really, you know, unexamined fat phobia.
Well, I'm so happy that you brought this up, because we pulled that video as something we wanted to talk about on today's episode. And I think for a couple different reasons. And let me circle back, just in case. I feel like all of our listeners would know what we're talking about, but just in case they don't, what William is referring to is Taylor Swift stepping onto a scale and seeing the word fat on the scale in her Anti-Hero music video, which has now been changed. But like you said, there was no statement released. They just took it out and kind of took out that view of the scale. And it's just like Taylor looking at herself, kind of like looking down on her when she's stepping on the scale.
Sure. Which is, you know, better, but, you know, not perfect. But, you know, it's better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And so if you don't mind, you don't have to like verbatim say what you said in the video, but I love something about your content that I think is so amazing and like addicting, is I love how you, not in every video that you do, but you play two characters and you play like the different points of view, and you have a discussion with yourself, which is very hard to do.
That's the theater school training.
Yes. Okay. So that's where the theater in you comes out. But so we can make this like a twofold question of, how did you get your inspiration? I guess theater, I want you to expand on that. But then also, if you want to kind of summarize what you were saying when you responded to the fat phobia that you saw on the internet with the Anti-Hero music video.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, thank you for noticing that I developed these characters. I think that it's a really fun way to educate, and it makes my video production a lot more fun for me. But also, essentially what I was saying in that video was like, don't double down on your fat phobia because Taylor Swift like heard criticism and took it not with a grain of salt, you know? And there was definitely like that fear there that she would take it with a grain of salt because, you know, for Taylor Swift's own mental health, like she's had to develop this support system around her and this like filtration of what she sees on social media because, you know, we were all there for the Reputation era, you know, like we all saw the Miss Americana documentary. Like she has these walls put up so that she is, you know, protecting her own mental health as a public figure, which is spectacular, you know, but I was afraid that like that criticism wouldn't make it to her and that nothing would be done about it because of those walls being put up. And so I was very happy to see that she had changed it. But what people weren't happy about, and by people, I mean like really like devoted Swifties that like will fight for anything that she does tooth and nail. I think that like the response that they had was like, Taylor will never ever share any of her insecurities with us ever again because you guys made her feel so bad for like this individual thing. And it's like, well, Taylor Swift's fat phobia does not exist in a vacuum and neither does any of our fat phobia. You know, like you can't just present it unexamined. And especially when you do present it unexamined and it gets called out, you can't just leave it be as it is, you know, like fat people are a very real and very oppressed group of people. And like Taylor Swift has fat fans, like how are they supposed to feel seeing their identity, their self-described identity be pointed out as her greatest fear? So, yeah.
You're amazing. Thank you for that. I mean, I watched the video 6 times and then I got lost in the comment section of that video. And something that I admire and love about you, I'm just going to say it, is your grace when you answer these people. Because you answer a lot of them. And I was like liking all of your answers. So I was like, I don't know that I would have the patience to respond in the way that you do. But I think you bring up so much in that comment section of that video, just like challenging people back. And so I just want to say thank you for doing that. I mean, I would like to tell both of you that I am not a Swiftie. And at first I was like,
it's a scandalous thing to admit nowadays.
Right? I know people are going to unfollow us or me. But I think that I wasn't one of the first to know that this was happening. And when I started diving deep into it, there was a lot more surrounding this beyond fat phobia, too. I mean, there were a lot of racist pieces to it, too. A lot of videos along that, and it was very, very shocking to see people in your comment section really just pulling it all out.
Absolutely. No, and it's shocking the extent to which stan culture does not leave any room for nuance, and it's really upsetting that people can be so attached to their parasocial relationship with someone that they don't leave any room for human error in that person that they stan, you know?
Such a great point. And I feel like too, I think you had said this previously about how it's a shame that there was no statement that was put out because we are all humans. We are all fatphobic to a fault because we are raised in this society. And so you have to actively unlearn it and actively.
Yeah, just like we are all racist, just like we are all sexist. We are taught these things.
Yes.
We, as our intersecting identities give us privilege due to these systems, we hold on to that privilege. We hold on to our proximity to those highest identities. And we don't want them taken away fundamentally because our lives are, you know, at least in our experiential realm bettered by it, even though the actual fact of it is, you know, no one is liberated if everyone isn't liberated.
Oh, I could listen to you speak forever. I know Jenna feels the same. You're just very eloquent with how you talk about this, and it makes so much sense.
I've learned a lot from some really incredible people: Caleb Luna, Deshaun Harrison, Sonia Renee Taylor, tons of just really, really incredible people. Aubrey Gordon, just great educators that have had a tremendous impact on the way I see these issues, and so I really can't take credit for the you know, takes I have on these things. Like, they have been taught to me, and I would absolutely be remiss if I did not acknowledge that, like, that education comes from those incredible educators. And to your listeners, if you don't know their work and you don't follow those people, you absolutely should. You should go pay them, you should go buy their work. They're incredible educators. They're incredible people that you guys should invite onto your podcast if you have the chance, that platform them in any way that you can, because they're all really incredible, and I've learned so much from them.
Thank you for sharing all of that.
I was just going to say, just thank you for sharing. And if only the whole world / your comment section could have the curiosity that you do, the world would be a completely different place.
Yeah, I think that one of the most important parts about advocacy and about being an empathetic person in general is just that, like, you have to approach things knowing that you don't know everything and always being willing to learn and listen. If someone says something to you that doesn't align with your values and doesn't match with the version of the world that you currently understand, you have to take that into consideration and think, is this, like, a vile, terrible thing? Or is this a perspective I'm not aware of yet? And, like, sometimes it is a vile, terrible thing, you know? Like people defending oppression in any form, like, that's a vile, terrible thing. They might not realize it's a vile, terrible thing. And, like, if you have it within you to, especially if that is, like, not an oppressed group that you are a part of, but you're aware of that group's oppression, like, you absolutely should stick up for them. I would never suggest that, like, an oppressed person has a responsibility to defend their own humanity, especially uncompensated. But, like, I would say that, like, you know, if someone is saying a vile, terrible thing and they don't know it, educate them. If they're saying a vile, terrible thing and they know it, maybe don't associate with that person anymore. and if you think it might be a vile, terrible thing, but you learn new information and it's not, take that in and give each thing the opportunity to, like, really assess, is this a vile, terrible thing, or is this something I'm just not aware of?
So besides being so well-spoken and so well-versed on all of these incredible topics, before we dive into anything else, can you please tell our listeners who William Hornby is? And a little bit more about yourself besides the Swifty part of you and the theater, or expand on both. But we would love to just know more about you and your story, whatever you'd be willing to share.
Absolutely. So I grew up in rural Maryland, and I moved to Baltimore at 13 years old with my dad. My parents are incredible people who supported my pursuit of the arts very deeply, and I'm very, like, privileged in that way. They really made it possible for me to go to this non-districted high school called Baltimore School for the Arts, which I owe my life to. That school changed my life completely, and I would not be the person I am today if I had not gone there. I was a classical voice major there. I studied opera with a member of the Washington National Opera, and we had an incredible, incredible time together at that school. I'm living with someone I was best friends with in high school. A lot of my best friends in the world are from that high school, because it was just such a special, wonderful place. Whenever I can, as an artist, I try to hire people from my high school, because they're just incredible people. And I have so much like respect and love for that community. But then I went to Temple University and I got a BBA in business management and a BFA in musical theater. I initially went in as strictly a musical theater student, and then I really missed doing math. So I was like, I will add in a business degree. And no one had ever done that with the BFA at Temple before, so I had to fight for it. But I did 5 years of undergrad, and I took like 22 credits a semester essentially, and I got both degrees. And it was rough, but I'm glad that I did it. I met some of my best friends in college as well. I love them very much. Most of them are in Philly. I visit Philly often, because it's right next door to where I currently live, which is New York. And I wanted to be a professional actor for a really long time. I think part of me still does. And that's something I weigh. And I am also a singer-songwriter, and I'm very proud of the work that I put out for that. I have a song called Clay. It was my debut single. And Clay is about living with body dysmorphia and handling it in a very body neutral way. I'm very proud of the music video I made for Clay. I'm very proud of the song itself. And I'm very proud of the other music I've recorded as well. And I am currently working as a professional eating disorder recovery advocate. I give my talk, The Power of Becoming the Advocate You Needed, at schools and organizations and companies across the country, and if we're counting virtual presentations around the world as well. And I feel very fulfilled by the work that I'm doing. And I feel I feel very grateful to have been given the platform that I've been given to talk about this stuff.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And holy shit, if I was looking at your resume in front of me, which I kind of am because I have your bio, very impressed by everything. It's so cool to see the intersections of all the different things you've done, but how they kind of all complement each other so beautifully.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people get out of college and they're like, I don't use my degrees at all. College was such a waste of time, blah, 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 blah. And like, there is so much value in that. And like, I would not take that away from anyone. Like, if you regret college, you regret college. And I'm very sorry that you have student loans. For me, I use both of my degrees every day. And I'm very, very grateful that I studied both things I studied. It helps me run my own business, essentially. And it also helps me to do public speaking very smoothly and be able to create these videos and word them in a way that I think really is able to present both sides of an argument almost, or present people an example of how to like talk yourself down from an irrational thought or a misconception. So, yeah.
Amazing. So now for you personally, was there a time when you struggled with eating disorder? And if so, when was that throughout kind of this timeline that you just shared with us?
Yeah, so I developed an eating disorder around the time I was 11 years old. I grew up in a very diet culture-y household, as well as I'm a gay man, and I've worked professionally and pre-professionally in theater, which is an incredibly old and anti-fat systemically art form. And it just all of those things combined like kind of came together in this perfect storm kind of way to give me an eating disorder and make that eating disorder worse over time. I had a more restrictive eating disorder in middle school and high school. And then when I got to college, it became more of a binge and restrict cycle. And then eventually I sought help from a registered dietitian at my university. And she led me to a therapist, and that therapist diagnosed me with an eating disorder. And then I started working with a dietitian, and there are a lot more nuances to that story than I'm presenting, but You can hear them on other podcasts and in other places. Or you can hire me to come give my speech at your school, and I will gladly I'll gladly present that to you. But I did not get diagnosed with an eating disorder until 10 years into my eating disorder. And a lot of the reason why is two things, which is especially earlier on when I was like at home and like in like a minor, like I had a pretty obvious eating disorder that would have been diagnosed as an eating disorder in a woman probably, but because I was a man, that did not happen. And also my eating disorder was much more, it was OSFED, which is other specified feeding or eating disorders. And it was not anorexia nervosa or bulimia nervosa or binge eating disorder. And those are really the only three eating disorders that we hear about in like a public health context and in a public school health education context. And really binge eating disorder is barely touched on. So really, if you're not like, if you don't have anorexia nervosa, and if you don't have bulimia in the specific ways we're taught that bulimia is purging presents, then you might be in a position where you're telling yourself, well, it's not bad enough. I'm not actually going through this thing. And you know, especially for me as someone who mainly had friends who were girls in middle school and high school, I very much feminized the idea of eating disorders, like I think most people do, because our society tells us that eating disorders are something that only happen to women, as well as most of them had anorexia nervosa or bulimia nervosa. And so I was comparing my experience to theirs and was thinking, well, I'm not going through what they're going through. What they're going through is more extreme. It has more physical consequences. And therefore, I don't deserve to ask for help. And like, I would be wasting resources to ask for help, which, you know, obviously I no longer believe that and actively advocate against that, that belief. But that was the belief I held at the time. And so now I've been in recovery for a while, and I'm doing really well.
Oh, sorry to have interrupted there. Thank you
no,
so
no, don't
much
worry.
For sharing that. Thank you so much for sharing that. Honestly, I was trying to search before the statistics. I know that on Nita's website, I hope I said that correctly. I never know. But on their website,
yeah,
they have this.
Nita, don't worry.
It's Nita, right? Okay. On their, the National Eating Disorder Association. Yeah. On their website, they have the stats about the male eating disorders, I believe.
Yeah, well, in the stat, the most recent and probably most viable stat that the Veritas Collaborative has presented is around 20 to 45% of all people with eating disorders are men. And coupled with the fact that less than 1% of all eating disorder research has been conducted on men, that's a really abysmal statistic. And also we have to remember that that statistic probably does not reflect reality, because you know, a lot of statistics are developed based on sampling people's, you know, feedback. And a lot of men who have eating disorders don't know that they have eating disorders or are actively hiding that they have eating disorders. They're not going to answer that they struggle with eating food or that they have a, you know, purging-like relationship with exercise. They're not going to admit to that in a study. So that statistic is definitely not necessarily true. And also that is a wide range, 20 to 45%. Like that's really like ballpark, we don't really know. But what we do know is that a lot of men have eating disorders and a lot of men have no outlet for care and no resources that provide them education for what to look for within themselves as to whether they might be struggling with eating.
And I feel like, especially for men, a lot of these behaviors are so normalized. Like there's an eating disorder classification. And again, I need to brush up on my verbiage of it, but I believe it's muscle dysmorphia.
There is a kind of colloquial diagnosis, if you will, that is not in the DSM-5, bigorexia. Bigorexia is like kind of this idea of like really, really gaining a lot of muscular weight in particular, and, you know, trying to have a very low body fat percentage. And that, I mean, often is very deadly for men in particular, but really it is kind of just male anorexia to some extent. It's not an official diagnosis because a lot of these, for one thing, the DSM-5 hasn't been updated since I think 2013. But also, it's very, diagnoses are mainly for insurance purposes, and like they are really not as one size fits all as we like to present them as. They're also not nearly as nuanced as we present them as. And so a lot of people are living within more of a gray area, and like they might check off 7 out of 10 of the symptoms of anorexia and go, well, I don't check off 10 out of 10, so I don't have it, or I'm not struggling, you know? And a lot of people, you know, will point to the DSM-5 and be like, well, if it's not in the DSM-5, then like, then like, it's not a real thing. And it's kind of like, well, it's outdated. but I think that what most men are dealing with at this point is probably orthorexia nervosa, which is also not in the DSM-5, but it is a, again, a colloquial kind of diagnosis that has been created to address people who have eating disorders that mainly consist of an obsession with eating clean, in quotation marks, and really like exercising to an extreme, and truly exercising for the purpose of looks rather than for like joyful movement purposes.
Thank you for bringing attention to all of that. And Jenna, I don't know if you are on the same wavelength as me, but I feel like how you had said previously about how men, like a lot of these things are normalized, right? Like these disordered behaviors as normal behaviors. And as three human beings who are all on TikTok, I think, and William is already laughing at this, but I mean, and not to joke about eating disorders in any way, I don't want it to come off like that, right? Of course not. But seeing, like, I think every week Jenna and I will talk about a TikTok that we saw where someone's eating a brain, or, you know, drinking, what was the one last week, Jenna? Drinking testicular juice or something from
with a parasite cleanse.
It's just, you know, you see these behaviors and it's like, how don't people know they're sick?
Almost, yeah, I mean, right? Because it's so normalized, and for men in particular, we've kind of crafted this definition of masculinity that includes disordered eating and includes an obsession with physique and exercise. And because it is tied into masculinity, it is an incredibly complex issue, because like I said earlier, when you have something that gives you privilege, you kind of hold on to it with a death grip. Even though the construct of masculinity actively harms all people in society, and the patriarchy actively harms all people in society, including men, it is on men to dismantle it, because men are the people who uphold it. They're upholding the system that is actively hurting them. And that system currently includes really disordered exercise and eating patterns. And because it is tied into masculinity, men will defend those patterns with their lives and will be very, very aggressive when anyone goes to point out that they might not be the, you know, most mentally well approaches to nutrition and fitness.
Yes. Which bridges perfectly into the next, and I want to be cautious of your time, but bridges perfectly into the next question that I had, or really just wanted to bring attention to this, that I was just so happy to see your video the other day or a couple weeks ago about hair loss in a journey, a health journey, I'm air quoting, because you bring attention to things that people, again, have normalized, but like these things are red flags from our bodies that we are just constantly ignoring. And I use myself as an example. Our listeners that are listening and not watching, but like the entire underneath of my hair has regrown over the past 6 years from years of disordered eating, that it all fell out. And now just like want to put it out there, it's growing in ringlets when the rest of my hair dries straight. So it's like two different types. That's how you know it's new, because it's ringlets like down here. I can't let my hair air dry anymore. Anyways, but you brought attention to this video, or in this video, I had a huge reaction where you really like, you connected so deeply with your audience, and you're bringing to light these very serious things that people just think, oh, that's just, that just happens when you're losing fat. Like, no.
Yeah. Well, like a lot of times my videos are inspired not by like even comments on TikToks or things I see on TikTok, because I'm not the most online person anymore. It's more, I have conversations with people in real life, and these people are deeply entrenched in diet culture. And these people can be within my family, they can be within my friends. That video, actually, I'd been sitting on the concept of it for probably 9 months. So it really, it was like a little baby. I heard one of my mom's friends talking about being on this diet that she was on, and talking about how she was experiencing hair loss from it, and was just like, yeah, but that's what happens when you like go on a diet. And I remember thinking, that is what happens when your body is not getting enough nutrients and not enough caloric energy to sustain bodily functions such as hair growth. And I had written that down in my notes app, and I had not gotten to it for a while, because I took a 4.5 month break from social media this summer. Really, it started in April, and I came back in September, and it was mainly because I was graduating, I was going through some mental health stuff on my own that I really needed to sort out and recover from first, unrelated to my eating disorder, that I needed to sort through. And really, it was a very nice summer. I worked at this restaurant in Philly called the Victor Cafe, where I was an opera singing busser for the summer. It was very fun. And I took a real break and restructured the way that I approached my job, and really like built the foundation for a transition from more of an influencer to more of a advocate and public speaker professionally.
That is amazing. First of all, an opera singing busser, that like both Jenna and I, if anybody watches our YouTube version of this, our jaws drop, because I've never heard of that. I would have paid great money to see that. And I hope that you got loads of tips, because that
was very fun. Sometimes I'd get personal tips. It was very
exciting. Yeah, amazing.
And it was a lovely restaurant to work at. If you're ever in Philly, please go.
My brother lives in Philly, so I'm going to have to go.
Wonderful. No, you should totally go there. It's like before I even worked there, it was one of my favorite restaurants. Like it's such a cool place, and the food is spectacular.
Amazing. Well, we will plug them. We got to put that website in our show notes. But this is a perfect kind of segue into, at the beginning of the episode, we said we wanted to circle back what we were talking about off air.
Yeah, yeah. Just
how you do
so. I was giving you that segue.
Thank you for giving me that. well, because you had said a little bit earlier about how, like, yeah, I'm not online the most. And then you led into, you know, your kind of 4 month sabbatical away from social. Yeah. And we just did an interview with Brittany Lancaster, who I'm sure you know through TikTok, who kind of gave us a similar conversation as she took about 3 months off and was sorting through some mental health stuff. So, you know, as an advocate in the mental health eating disorder recovery space, what are some of the things that you do that you can share with listeners to protect your mental health? And of course, you have to plug what you told us off air, because it blew our minds. And I'm about to go to Apple after this invest.
And you can write it off as a business expense. Mm-hmm. One of the best things I've done for my mental health is I have a work phone and I have a personal phone, and my work phone is where I record my social media. It's where I do all of my editing. It's where my social media lives. I don't have Instagram on my personal phone. I don't have TikTok on my personal phone. And that way I can't constantly check my engagement on those things, which was really a problem for me earlier on in the development of all of this. And I've really found that like having almost a physical barrier between me and those apps, like setting like time limits on those apps wasn't enough because I had the password for it and I could surpass it, you know? And I don't have that kind of control, quite frankly, to be able to keep to something like that. And I think that that's every one of us. We're like little monkeys attracted to shiny little things. And we want, you know, we want to see the social engagement that we're getting. And I truly don't believe we were ever meant to be connected to this many people. And it's, you know, it's a very nice barrier that I have set up. It's not something I would necessarily recommend for like any average person or average listener necessarily. It's a pretty inaccessible and privileged thing to have. I've obviously made money through my business of talking about these things that allowed me to purchase an extra phone for this. So that is not a blanket recommendation necessarily, but it is definitely like if you are in the creating space and you are making money as a creator and you have a following that engages with you to an extent that you tend to have trouble getting off of your phone because you feel this constant pressure to be engaging with your audience. It's really helpful to, you know, get a work phone, keep it in your office or in a particular space. Don't bring it into your bedroom. If you have that extra phone, leaving it in a certain place and setting hours for it where you're like, I will only look at my phone from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Those are the only times I will allow myself to look at TikTok, look at Instagram. And you can, of course, make exceptions based on like what your life is looking like, you know, like a gentle approach, if you will, to addressing social media addiction. Like, you know, I have a futon in my office. I lay down on my futon, and that's where I do my scrolling through social media occasionally. And, you know, I have a private Twitter on my phone that is only me, and that's where I retweet things. And it's looking like I retweet things solely for me, just to, like, know what's going on in the world. But it's looking like Twitter might not be a thing soon, so we'll find out about that. I'm terrified of being on Twitter, like, as a like public figure, because that seems scary. Twitter is a scary place to me. In the same way that TikTok is scary for some people and Instagram is scary for some people. I think that having no personal social media really has been a very impactful and good thing for me. I don't really see what my friends post on social media. I don't really feel any pressure to show off for my friends or like show any parts of my life to the general public. A lot of my social media presence is purely professional. And because of that, I really get to live this separate life offline that is very fun and exciting and fulfilling. And I think my main recommendation for like mental health like stuff right now is like really considering the content you engage with. And that's not just like putting up barriers in terms of like if you follow a friend even like on Instagram that is like posting harmful stuff, like maybe there's a close friend or family member that you don't want them to see that they were unfollowed on Instagram by you, but they're posting about their like quote-unquote weight loss journey, like you can mute them on Instagram. Not everyone knows you can mute people on Instagram. You can mute people on Instagram. I do it a lot. And it makes the experience a lot better. If you see harmful things on TikTok, not only can you report them, but you can also, you know, block that person. If you are not a social figure on TikTok, they're never gonna know that you blocked them. and it's going to be fine. Or you can say, like, I'm not interested in this content. You can press down on the video. You can say, I'm not interested in this content. You can also, and not everyone knows this, you can clear your cache spelled C-A-C-H-E, on TikTok. And when you do that, it completely resets your algorithm. The algorithm forgets everything it's ever learned about you, and you can redo your algorithm so that, like, if the algorithm picked up on the fact that you have an eating disorder and it is showing you really harmful eating disorder content, like, you can go out of your way after you clear your cache to not engage with anything that is even slightly in that realm so that the algorithm doesn't learn that about you, and so that you are experiencing social media in a much less harmful way. And it's also really important to remember that, you know, what people show on social media is a very curated version of their lives. But my biggest tip for what's helped me lately is I've started watching, like, TV again, and I've started, like, watching movies again, and I've read 32 books since April, and it has been lovely. Like, I think that engaging in long-form content, just, like, as a consumer of art, is so fulfilling and important, because long-form content takes so long to create, and it is so well thought out, that, like, it just, there's something really special about it. Like, reading a book for a long time, and, like, watching a movie, and maybe even binging a Netflix series. Like, that used to be something that was, like, frowned upon, and, like, kids these days, right? But, like, I think that, like, watching TV is almost the new reading. Like, people engage in short form content to the extent that, like, if you asked me to summarize every TikTok I saw in a day back in, like, May 2020, like, I simply could not tell you. And, like, it kind of leads to this mindless consumption of media that is not something that I would say is, like, morally wrong. And I'm not presenting myself as, like, being on the moral high ground for engaging with long-form content. There is absolutely a place for mindlessly scrolling. And I think that a lot of times it is a nice remedy or a nice activity to engage in when you're feeling incredibly burnt out. It can be just, like, a really good, like, way to rest for people. But also, I think there's so much value in long-form content, and it's really worth engaging with. And it's really worth supporting artists who are making it. And, you know, as you feel comfortable re-entering society, depending on, you know, the extent to which you are immunocompromised, I think really going out and seeing art, like live performance, is really wonderful, to the extent that you feel safe doing that.
But I just need to know before we wrap up here, what are you binging right now? What show? Anything good? Well, I need to know.
What am I binging right now? Every few weeks, I rewatch Heartstopper season one on Netflix, which is about two little gay boys in love. And it's very sweet, and it is one of the most heartwarming and incredible things I have ever seen. And I love it so much. I am also right now watching Love is Blind, which is definitely a more mindless consumption thing for me. It's not a, like, I'm super invested in this really well-crafted long-form content thing. Something I am watching for the culture is I'm rewatching Glee with my housemate, and that is really a wild ride. We are in season 5. It is rough out here, and we are doing our very best to get through to the end. It gets harder and harder every day. We just finished today. We watched the previously unaired Christmas episode in season 5. And it isn't previously unaired. They filmed it as part of their regular schedule. It is a horrible episode of Glee. We just kept saying, like, this is absolutely terrible. But I love listening to the Recovering Gleek podcast. And I get to, like, you know, watch Glee along with that. That's very fun. And I really enjoy podcasts as well. Maintenance Phase is a great podcast. I highly recommend listening to that. Yeah, like I said, I've recently really come up with a varied amount of, like, hobbies and things that I do because they make me happy. I play Pokemon Go all the time. That makes me happy. I play things on my Switch. That makes me happy. I watch Glee with my housemate. That makes me happy. I carve pumpkins sometimes in October. That makes me happy. I get to do all these things that make me happy. I get to read. Reading is just, I love it so much. It's something I really couldn't do for pleasure that much in college, and it's something I get to do now. And I think really just finding the things that make you happy is really great. And also, like, being in therapy and having, like, but if you have the resources, like, having a psychiatrist who prescribes you the right medication eventually really allows for you to be able to engage in that stuff in a much more typical way.
Thank you so much for all of these tips and tricks. And I think so many people can relate to this, as we are all on our phones, right? Looking down, taking in content, whether you're a creator or not. I think those are amazing tips. So for people that are listening to this episode that are like, okay, I need more William in my life, where should they go to find more of you?
So they can find me on TikTok and Instagram at William Hornby. They can find me on YouTube, I think also at William Hornby. They can find me at my website, williamhornby.com. And they can email me at williamdavidhornby@gmail.com if they have any more long-form questions that they'd like to inquire about. Oh, God. Sorry. Those reminded me so loud.
That was actually, like, the perfect noise. It's like, if you want to email me. And then it was like, ding. So we're going to end right on that note. And William, just thank you for being here and sharing your light with the world. We need more Williams in this world.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of What the Actual Fork Pod. We know there are a lot of pods out there, and we are so grateful that you are here listening with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe, like, share with all your friends and faves, and follow along with us on social at What the Actual Fork Pod. We promise to continue to bring you the hottest topics, greatest guests, and the most fun you can possibly have while fighting diet culture bullshit. We love you, we appreciate you, and we will see you next week for a lot more fun.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.